The Supreme Court this week upheld the practice of taking DNA samples of people arrested in felony cases, even if they're not charged. The ruling, Maryland v. King, was a 5-4 decision. In the majority opinion, Justice Anthony Kennedy called swabbing for DNA a legitimate police booking procedure, like fingerprinting and photographing. But in his passionate dissent yesterday, Justice Antonin Scalia said, "It may be wise, as the court obviously believes, to make the Leviathan all-seeing so that he may protect us all the better. But the proud men who wrote the Charter of our liberties would not have been so eager to open their mouths for royal inspection." "I dissent," said Scalia. DNA is, of course, a TV star, in addition to being just a molecule. On shows like Law & Order, Bones, and CSI, DNA evidence solves cases every night. How much of what we fear about DNA evidence comes from our mythology about it, and how much is hard science? Here with me to explain what it all means for investigations of crime scenes is Gregory Laskowski, criminologist and consultant to the CBS series CSI. Greg, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
So can DNA turn us all in if there's a government database available to link us to anything we touch, any place we breathe?
Potentially that could be the case, but I think practically or pragmatically that's not going to really happen. As it stands, only convicted offenders and people who are arrested for major crimes and some misdemeanors, and that's particularly in California, would be subject to having a DNA collection entry into a national database.
Now, is it the case that DNA, if someone swabs your cheek, can just be plugged into some information database and possibly pop up as being involved in a crime that took place 10 years ago?
Well, right now there are currently very strict controls as to how DNA data is entered into these national databases such as CODIS. Law enforcement can collect DNA samples, and then those are presented to a laboratory, currently an accredited laboratory under DNA guidelines or DAB guidelines, and then those samples must be go under a rigorous testing procedure before they can be uploaded into the system. So there are criteria for entry into those databases, so not just anyone or anybody can collect the DNA sample and then enter it into a database.
Before DNA, of course, there were fingerprints, and fingerprints had certain weaknesses, even if you got a perfect fingerprint lifted off of a piece of glass, for instance. But there are lots of places where fingerprint evidence is of no help. What are the limitations of DNA evidence, and would you say it's more definitive than our original notions of fingerprinting?
Well, DNA evidence can be more definitive, particularly if you look at in terms of doing straight statistics on all the different loci and alleles that DNA has to offer, it looks much more sound than fingerprints. On the other hand, fingerprints can distinguish between identical twins, whereas DNA cannot. The other aspect of fingerprints and its limitations are is if you have a smudged fingerprint, it is now possible with our DNA technology to perhaps get useful DNA profiles from smudged fingerprints.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, one of the things about this that is ironic to me is as futuristic as DNA evidence seems, and when you watch shows like CSI, there's all the lab equipment and scientific procedures associated with it. I mean, it's really hard to plant a fingerprint on a crime scene. That's really, really difficult. But tossing somebody's DNA onto a crime scene, that's, you know, any idiot can do that.
That might be true. It is very difficult to plant fingerprints, and sometimes when people have attempted to plant fingerprints, that has been discovered. On the other hand, one could leave someone's DNA or smear someone's DNA onto an object without anyone knowing it, and the police could find it. And with the new technologies and I think future technologies, we'll be able to work with smaller and smaller DNA samples and still get robust results.
How regulated, how careful are the labs that deal with this? There's a whole infrastructure built up around DNA identification for various reasons, and there have been some problems.
There have been problems, and there probably are some problems currently, but I would say for the most part, overall, laboratories that provide DNA testing and upload information into DNA databases such as CODIS are under very, very strict guidelines. And those tests are rigorously conducted. There's checks and double checks, and in some cases what I call triple checks, because when a case is conducted and DNA is entered into the databases, there have to be technical reviews. There also have to be administrative reviews, and that's for just the laboratory testing. Then for entry into CODIS, you have to have a CODIS manager who has to meet certain qualifications, and the laboratory has to meet certain accreditation guidelines to even enter this material and then search that material on these databases.
Finally, Greg, you know, Antonin Scalia suggests that Thomas Jefferson might not have been, quote, so eager to open his mouth for royal inspection for a DNA test, and would have been outraged by this Supreme Court decision. What do you think Thomas Jefferson would make of DNA testing? You think he'd submit to it? And what do you make of Scalia's dissent?
Well, I find that interesting because I know that Jefferson was somewhat of a scientist and inventor. And I think Jefferson was also interested in justice. And as long as there were strict controls, and even at that time, certain procedures would be followed rigorously, and it was a sort of a checks and balance system, I think he would agree to it.
Finally, I can't resist here. Have you ever had to tell those guys at CSI that, no, that's malarkey. You can't do that with DNA.
More than one occasion. That usually happens. Either at CSI or Bones or any of these shows, they can get quite fanciful. The writers, have ideas, and, they will go with whatever the science will lead them to.
Well, thanks for holding them back there, Greg.
Thank you.
Gregory Laskowski is a criminologist and consultant to the CBS series CSI.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.